I want to welcome you again to an hour of practical Christianity. And this morning I want to share with you 6 rules that will help you understand yourself and overcome the terrible feelings of hostility and anger in yourself and how to handle it when others have this feeling. So come now and join me and understand why you don't have to fight a duel in every conversation or in every experience of life, that there is a way, and it is a practical and loving way. Lesson is entitled Pistols at 20 Paces, and it has to do with the idea of hostility. It reminds me of the story of the man who went to visit a friend, and as he entered the door, he was accompanied by a very large dog. And within the first 5 minutes of the visit, this dog had knocked over an end table and broken a lamp, had scratched with his feet the highly polished floor of the home. He had sniffed around and moved things, and finally he had laid himself out on the beautiful white satin sofa with his dirty, muddy feet, until the host said, "I'm going to just have to ask you to take your dog and leave him outside." And to the astonishment of the guest, he said, "My dog? I thought it was your dog that was doing all this." When we look around in society and we see all the wrongness, all the terribleness, all the sin, all the degradation, we like to say, "Whose dog is this? Whose fault is this?" is what we're really saying. Who can we blame for all the inaction in our bureaucracy? Who can we blame for all the things that don't work right like they used to, or at least we thought they used to? Who is it we can blame for the inharmony in the home or in all of these different segments of society? Whose dog is this, is what we're really asking. And of course we find out that we're all part of a faulty system, and each of us is marred in the making. Thus, we are all faulty in our performance. No one is perfect. I don't know any system that is perfect in this world. And so we, rather than thinking, why isn't everything perfect? That seems a little immature when we think about it. Why do we get so upset when other people aren't perfect? But we don't seem to get nearly as upset when we find out that we're not perfect. Why is it that sometimes we want to fight a duel at 20 paces with everyone that does not act as we act, or think as we act, or conclude at the bottom line to the equations of life that we think are so right? Many people just worry and fret themselves to death because of what goes on television or next door or down the street, little realizing that every time you point one finger out at somebody else, there are 3 pointing back at you. I think that we all have a tremendous opportunity to make this a much better world, but we're not going to make it better by pointing our fingers in any direction. We're really going to make the world better by becoming a better person ourselves. This is sometimes the thing that we seldom think about. We think it's how we vote, and we've become a very legalistic society. We want to change all the words in the dictionary from him to them. I don't think that's going to bring equality. I don't think it's going to bring equality by giving certain groups of people more money. I think the way we're going to bring equality is when each of us find out where we are, and that is we are children of God, and that we are growing creations, and when we begin to treat everyone else as if they were a child of God, and if they were growing and are growing creations, I think that's the way we're going to change the world. And anything else we do, in my opinion, I think that we're simply asking people to duel it out. And there's a great deal of bitterness and anxiety and hostility in our world today because it's all coming from within us. as individuals and spreading out from center to circumference to the society around us. In the process, we're unhappy, and we oftentimes make people as unhappy as we are. So nothing seems to get solved. It doesn't seem to work too well. I ran across a little letter. It was printed. I don't know how I came about it in my files. It was written by a woman in her 85th year a few years ago, and she lived in Louisville, Kentucky. Her name was Nadine Stair. Now, that's all I know about her. But I know, after I've read the letter, something that we all have in common with Nadine. Maybe we're not 85 years old, but maybe we can see what she found out before we get 85 years old, or 105 years old. This is what she wrote. If I had my life to live over again, I'd dare to make more mistakes next time. I'd relax. I would be sillier than I have been on this trip. I would take fewer things seriously. I would take more chances. I would make more trips. I would climb more mountains and swim more rivers. I would eat more ice cream and fewer beans. I would perhaps have more actual troubles, but I'd have fewer imaginary ones. You see, I'm one of those people who live sensibly and sanely, hour after hour, day after day. Oh, I've had my moments. And if I had it all to do over again, I'd have more of them. In fact, I'd try to have more of them and nothing else. Just moments, one after another, instead of living so many years ahead of each day. I've been one of those persons who never goes anywhere without a thermometer, a hot water bottle, a raincoat, and a parachute. If I had it to do over again, I'd travel lighter. If I had my life to live over, I would start barefoot earlier in the springtime and stay that way later in the fall. I would go to more dances. I would ride more merry-go-rounds. I would pick more daisies. She wrote a letter that's written on every one of our hearts. And what she said is very true. But why do we not do all the things that we want to do? Even when we hear this kind of philosophy, which we say, that's right, why don't we go out of here after this hour, wherever we go, and begin to ride more merry-go-rounds and climb more mountains and pick more flowers? Why don't we? Because we're all hemmed in to some degree. And the thing that hems us in is hostility and anger. Sometimes it's not directed. We don't know who it belongs to. We just know it's in us. And it can sometimes spoil the most beautiful dinner. It can ruin the most beautiful day for us and those we love the most. And we wonder where this comes from. Do you know that there was once a war that was fought because of a man's ear? It seems like that there was once a Captain Jenkins. He was an English sea captain, and he had a little ship of his own. And the Spanish, whom he had been pestering, thought he was a pirate. And they were right, he was. But they couldn't prove it. They finally caught Captain Jenkins. And just to show him where their hearts were, the Spanish cut off his ear. And Captain Jenkins went home as fast as he could to England, and there he talked to the monarch, and he said, look what they did. And the monarch, at that time, was just waiting for an excuse to fight a battle with the Spanish, and so he sent out his ships, and they fought the Spanish because of Captain Jenkins' missed ear. It's called in history books, and you can look it up, it is called the War of Jenkins' Ear. Now, I wonder how many of us are listening and creating a war with our own ears. When someone comes up to you and says, get out of my way, I'm in a hurry, I want to buy my ticket right now, and elbow their way in. How many of us hear that? Or how many of us actually hear a person who is saying, I feel so bad, I'm so miserable, I'm so upset, that it doesn't bother me at all if I upset you? How many people hear the problems in someone when they are rude to us, when they bump us out of the way, or when they give us a bad-looking look? How many of us hear the real? How many of us are willing to fight a war because we hear what they really say? I think most of us have become very aware through our school books and through the tragedy of the great sinking of the Titanic in 1912, The Titanic was a huge ship, the largest that had ever been built. It belonged to England. It was the greatest ship of the White Star Line. You know, you remember that in 1912 it hit an iceberg, this unsinkable ship, and it sunk. It sunk. Of the 2,000 people aboard, 1,517 were killed, drowned in that terrible tragedy. The tragedy of it all, the tragedy, of course, they did not have proper exercises of going to the lifeboats. The crew was not trained perfectly, and out of that, of course, they organized the International Iceberg Patrol, which we still have. A great deal of things were organized because of it. But the great tragedy of the sinking of the Titanic was that 30 miles away, there was a great large steamer, and it was going parallel with the Titanic, except on that fateful night in 1912, the radio operator on the California closed up shop at 10:30 at night, and so at 10:45, 46, when the desperate dashing of the SOS of the Titanic was going all around the world asking for help, the radio operator was eating his dinner and soon to go to bed on the California, and it sailed right on. And it missed the opportunity to probably save 2/3 of the lives that were lost. I wonder, when many of us think about it, how many of us are California ships plowing along through life, and we've closed down our radio operations, and we are not listening, and we're busy eating our dinner or doing our job or whatever we're doing, and we're really not hearing the people sometimes that live with us or live next door to us or work with us. We're not listening to them tapping out the SOSs. What we're really doing is sometimes kicking them when they say things that our ear hears, but our heart does not decode. And of course, we create a great deal of hostility within ourselves and within others. So there's many things that we must do. We hear it read in the great book of love in 1 Corinthians. In the 13th chapter, it says, love is. What is love? Love is long-suffering. Love does not rejoice in the evil, but in the good. Love is patient. Love is kind. Oh, we hear that. But how do we bring that into operation? Well, I have 6 tested rules. I've tested them myself. I really started out with a lot more. But in the testing, some of them didn't work out too well. So I want to pass on 6 true and tested rules of how you can become aware, how you can handle hostility. And if you do these things, blessed are you if you hear them, but more blessed are you if you go out and do them. Now, what is the first one? This is just simply dealing with people. What's the first one? Well, the first one is, when you're talking to people, let whoever is talking to you state his case. Don't interrupt. Don't say, oh, yes, yes, I know. When somebody says, now listen, you went to the store and you forgot the vinegar, before they get to the word erger, don't interrupt them. Let them continue. You just don't want them to say the whole thing. You just don't want them to say, you forgot the vinegar. Let them say it. Let them say everything they want to, because that's the way you get it all out. And so if you did forget the vinegar, that's not any world-crashing thing. Remember, you're not perfect. And you don't have to pretend you are. You're working at it, you're trying, but you don't have to. If somebody says you're not perfect, don't act surprised. Go along with it. And that's why you can go along with it when you don't interrupt. And another thing, they may not be going to tell you that you forgot the vinegar. They may be going to tell you something else. There may say, you forgot the vinegar, but it's all right, I found some while you were gone. So you're going to save yourself a lot of trouble. Don't interrupt. And if you will do this and you allow the other person to say what he wants to, and then if you're really good at it, you'll let the other person say everything they want, and then you'll ask him a few questions. Like, did I really? Oh my, what kind of vinegar was it you wanted? You know, or how much did you want? A quart, a gallon, 50 gallons? How much did you want? Add a little to it. It shows that you're interested. Don't just sit there looking up at the ceiling when they're telling you all this. Look at them. Pay attention to them. because you're helping them communicate. You're helping them get this out. If you interrupt, and if you don't pay attention, and if you're not interested, you are creating hostility. And later on in the day or the afternoon, you're going to get that. So it's best to allow people to say everything they want to and don't interrupt. Now, what's number two? Number two, when you learn not to interrupt, as number one tells you, and they get all finished telling you what they want to, number two is pause. Take a deep breath and blink three times. And as you do this, you're not going to jump so fast. Have you ever been in a conversational group of people where you can just see that some of them are perched on the side of their chair waiting to jump in? The minute someone takes a breath to stop talking, they jump into the conversation. Oh, they say, and many people say, ah, and then they begin. And the ah is getting them in there, and then they say what they want to. That creates hostility too. If you really want to communicate with people, you have to be willing to pause and be sure they're through. In the process of pausing, it's going to give you time to say not what you feel, but to say what you think. And most of us get into great difficulty when we say what we feel. It is best to say what you thought out. Even though what you think may have been motivated by your feelings, think it out and then say it. Number three, this is important. Don't try to win 100%. Don't try to win 100%. If you can win 51% most of the time, you're in. That's all right. You don't have to win 100%. Let me tell you this. That if you win every argument 100%, have you learned anything? Not a thing. You've just told everybody what you know and they agree. You haven't learned a thing. If you can win an argument by 51%, you've learned 49% more than you started out with. If they can tell you some things every time you get in a conversation with someone, that's wonderful, because you're going to come out of that experience better than you went in. So don't be afraid if somebody can tell you something you don't know, because once they tell you know what they know. And you have learned something. You have expanded your consciousness, your awareness. This is how we learn. It doesn't matter. Some of us are certainly willing to learn from certain people. But are we really willing to learn from our enemies? Are we willing to learn from people we don't care for? That's where we learn the most. My dear friends, you learn so much more from your failures than you do from your successes. If you've never had a failure, I doubt if you've learned much in life. You may have fought hard long to keep from failing, and you probably in your own mind could say, well, I haven't failed. But I would ask you what you've learned. You could say, I win every argument 100% that I get into. You may have to do it by pulling rank or age or shouting or screaming or sulking or fighting. But actually, you really didn't win. You won, but you didn't gain anything. Life is to learn. Life is to become. Life is to be. You are. Your life is at any particular time the sum total of your awareness. And so we all want to continually expand our awareness. This old song, Give Me the Old Time Religion, it was good enough for Grandpa, it was good enough for Grandma. I love my Grandma and Grandpa. I love all my relatives. But I want to grow beyond them. That's why I have an automobile rather than a horse and buggy. That's why I turn on the faucet instead of going out and dumping the bucket in the well. It's interesting how we are. We're wanting to progress, and yet we sometimes say of religion, I don't want it to change. Everything has to evolve and grow and be and become. And I want you to grow. And I want the message of Jesus Christ to grow. Some of us almost feel that it has to stay the same or that it isn't authentic. Not so. The teachings of Jesus Christ have to grow along with all things and expose and expand themselves. Or we're going to find ourselves going backwards instead of forward. So we find out that you are to let everyone state their case, that you are to pause before you answer, and that you are not to insist upon winning 100%. Now, What's the fourth one? The fourth one is always state your case moderately and very accurately. I've always found that it's best to say, in my opinion, or I think, or this is the way it seems to me. Don't come down so hard and say, it is said, this is so, or this is the way it is. People are going to argue with you rather than your facts. They're going to get upset that you're so hard-nosed about it and stiff-necked, and what you say may be perfectly true, but they won't hear it. They will only hear the way, the dogmatic way, that you are giving it out. Have you ever noticed that with the same vein of modulation of voice that you begin a discussion, the other people will follow you along? If you start out shouting, the people that are in this discussion will shout too. If you start out in a moderate way, they will hold that moderation. If you slowly evolve yourself into a shouting match, they will follow you right along. You set the stage. You set the tone. You have the ability to do this. It's up to you. You're the first cause. You can affect them, but you're the first cause. So you can always put every argument or every way that you want to talk on any level you want to. You have that much control if you want to develop it. Life is not by chance. There isn't anything by chance in this universe. There are no miracles by chance. Everything is governed by law. And we want to be saved. And the Christian religion has always talked saving us from some devil or boogeyman, but that's ridiculous. The only problem in your life is you. And that problem comes from your not knowing about yourself. So if you want to be saved, you must be saved from yourself. And as you learn about yourself and learn to practice dealing with yourself and you learn the rules of yourself, there isn't anything you can't do. But it's up to you. You can't blame it on the society. You can't blame it on the system of government, on the economic, or your neighbor, or they, or them, or your wife, or husband, or children. That's ridiculous. You can spend your life doing that. And you will never change. You will never grow. So we find here that the fourth one says, state your case moderately and accurately. A few weeks ago, I had a chance to make an automobile trip from San Francisco to Los Angeles. And that's why I wasn't here that Sunday. And in driving, I had lots of time to think and reflect and repose myself. But I was thinking about hostility. And while I was in San Francisco, I read an article in Newsweek magazine that said that 13% of the accidents on the highway today, at least in California, are caused by anger reaction. In other words, somebody gets mad at somebody else and they ram. And so, I thought to myself, I'm going to see about that. That's a big statistic. 13% of the accidents are caused. Actually, they're not accidents. Somebody gets mad at somebody because they won't pull over. And I found this true. Not in my own experience, but for instance, in driving along Highway 1, which is beautiful from Monterey down to San Luis Obispo, and where there's just a two-lane highway on Big Sur, it's just a lovely area, but there's just two lanes, one coming, one going. And so you have to drive. If the fellow is slow, you drive behind him. And you have to be very careful. If you tailgate, you're going to make somebody mad. So you stand back and you wait a while, and pretty soon, if you just hold the right thoughts, it's surprising how people will pull off the road and get off. Now, this didn't happen to me because I didn't do one other thing. I had to start pulling off and letting people who wanted to go faster by me. That helped. And it wasn't long in doing that that they began to pull off the road for me. And so I could see that there was a great power here. But then as I got down on the freeway, I found there are some people that love to drive in the fast lane. They love to drive in the fast lane and they drive slow. I won't tell you how fast they drive, but some of them drive very close to the speed limit, and what they're really saying, this is the way you should drive, and I'm going to make you drive this way. And so you get behind them, and as I watched one man, and I was behind him, he got behind a slow fellow, and he honked, and he shook his fist, and he honked, and the fellow that was up in front was having a wonderful time. Oh, was he enjoying that! This terrible man behind him doing all this, and he was driving the speed limit, and he was feeling self-righteous and good. I'm imagining this, of course, but I think it's pretty true. Well, anyway, he just wouldn't get over. And I thought, I've seen a couple people like that. I'm going to try a little experiment. So pretty soon the other fellow pulled out and he ran forward and he ran over in front of me, and then he stayed there for a long time. Now I was behind all this, just watching the innocent, honest broker of the whole thing. And I found that there are people like that. So you pull up, you don't get too close, and then you pull over very carefully, and you use the signal light, and you go way up ahead of them, and then you pull over real closely, and you go on. Oh, it just ruins all the fun. There's no game in that. It diffuses them. And the interesting thing is that half the time I did that, as I looked in my rearview mirror way behind, I would see that fellow pull over one way. Now that is true. It is astounding how you can diffuse people by non-aggressive acts. By thinking things within your mind, you can actually diffuse hostility and aggression. And all of us need to know this. Every one of us. Because that makes life good and wonderful. We find that when we think of diffusing, we can talk in the third person. That means that we take people to tell things for us. And number six is we let people say things. Don't call them an incomplete. Let them say things. So now let us realize that there are six things that we can do to diffuse humility, and we can do them with God in our hearts. So let us pray. Let us give thanks that the Spirit of Jesus Christ does His mighty work in each one of us, that the words that I have said and the thoughts that I have given you will live in you forever, and you can use these thoughts to bring love and harmony and peace into your mind, in your heart, in your environment. And this we pray in the name of Jesus Christ.